Coming to you from the City of the Weird. Exploring topics from the esoteric and unexplored to dimensions unknown. Shining a light of truth on the darkest corners of our reality. Welcome to the Curious Realm. Well, happy Tuesday night, Curious Family. I hope you are all doing well. I hope you're all preparing well for the upcoming Thanksgiving holiday. I just found out that the gig I'm on is actively off on Thanksgiving, so I cannot wait to cook. It's one of my favorite days of the year to cook, have family over to eat, things like that. I hope you guys get to enjoy that as well. We have an amazing show for y'all tonight. In the second part of our show tonight, after break, we will be talking with John Adams. He's actually right here in Austin, and it dawned on me that, like, next time we have him on, we need to just be live with him. He lives right down the road. But he runs Adventures in Remote Viewing. I've seen a few things that he's written, a few things. I follow his group, Remote Viewing and Intuition, on Facebook. And I love some of the work that he puts out, specifically an article that he just put out regarding faux remote viewers and the dangers of that. And that is one of the things that we talk about on this show all the time, is issues like that within para communities, issues like that within UFO communities, cryptid communities, that the things that stymie research because you have people that are claiming to do such things, and confusing people and muddying up the waters between good research and good remote viewing and poor remote viewing. So we're going to be talking with him about that. Go follow his Facebook group, everything else. It's going to be a great conversation with John in the second part. During the first part of our show tonight, we have the pleasure of being joined by the amazing Elizabeth Joyce, medium, psychic. She is also a stroke survivor, and her latest book, Mysteries Revealed Beyond Mortal Boundaries, is based upon revelations and things that came to her post that condition and after that happening. So welcome to the show tonight, Elizabeth. How are you today?
I'm doing well, thank you.
Fantastic. I am so happy to have you on the show. I have been looking forward to this because to me, especially the idea of chakras, the idea of additional chakras beyond what we are typically told about. I myself am a binaural beat musician, things like that. My son is actively watching a chakra video that I made in his room right now as he goes to sleep. So the idea of there being numerous dimensionalities to our reality is something that we discuss on this show on a regular basis. So
I wrote a book about the new spiritual chakras in 2014, and that is on Amazon.
And you have quite the volume of books, actually. You've been writing for years, as you said before the show. Like, I'm familiar with your name because, yeah, you used to be on Coast to Coast AM every New Year's Eve with predictions and things like that. It was always the prediction episode that Art Bell would do, that kind of stuff. So how did you come to the world of mediumship to begin with, Elizabeth? Is it something that runs in your family?
Mediumship is not what I do.
Okay.
That's talking to the other side. I work with the universe or universal energies, and I am very psychic for some reason. My grandmother was a very well-known shaman here in New Hampshire from the time she, way back in the early 1900s. Right up until she passed in the 60s. And she was a healer, and she was a natural healer. And sometimes she could heal you just by looking at you, which was amazing. Everybody loved her, all three states, Massachusetts, Maine, and Vermont. That's where we bought her. And they would all come to her. I don't think she ever took any money for it.
Wow. Wow.
That's good. Terrific.
Now, at what age did you, I guess, begin having psychic impressions? I mean, like you said, this ran in your family, at least the
My grandmother was visiting us in New Jersey. That's where we lived, Bergen County. And she was walking down the stairs one morning, and I was 3 years old. So I went and I put my little hands around her ankle, and I said to her, I don't want you to fall down the stairs. That was 2 days before she did.
Oh, wow.
And when she fell down the stairs, she only sprained her ankle. And she told my father at the time, my leg would have been broken if your little daughter hadn't put her hands around my leg. I physically did it.
Wow.
And that changed the energy. There's so much we don't know about the human body and what it can do. So that was really the first time. But I've always had dreams. I've always had out of body. We never had cell phones and television. So what we would do is use our imagination. And the way I would entertain myself is I'd go up in my bedroom and I'd lie down on my bed and I'd go out of body. And I could go to Paris. I could go to London. I could go anywhere. And my parents would test me sometimes because they would look up in the newspaper what the weather was in London and then ask me, and I would always be able to tell them.
Wow. Wow. And how did these abilities grow in you as you grew, or?
Did they expand?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, they did, I'll tell you, because I worked in aviation. That was my job. I worked in private jets at Teterboro Airport in New York. And when I left that job, I came up to Vermont. My mother was sick, so I had to resign, and I came up to New Hampshire. And I met people that had been in India. I had never heard of meditation. I had never heard of Om Namah Shivaya or anything. And I was doing work in Wilmington, Vermont. And there was a group of about 30 people in a circle singing. And I looked through the door, and I said, oh, my gosh, I've got to have that. Immediately, I identified with it immediately. So I was with that group for 5 years, Indira and the Clear Light group. And that's when I really expanded. That's when I learned about Yoganandaji. And I knew about Edgar Cayce, but the other people. I worked with Louise Hay for 5 years in the 80s. I flew back and forth between New York and California and did the healing table in the back of the room when she would have her lectures.
Oh, wow.
The hayride. She did the hayride for 5 years, and I was a part of that. So it all was growing inside of me. Meanwhile, I was giving psychic readings. I teach the tarot, and I also do astrology.
Okay. Okay, and now, but you were mentioning that you worked the healing table. Are you a healer like your grandmother was?
Yes.
Wow.
Very, very much so.
And
in fact, I was living in Pennsylvania in the 90s and the early 2000s, and I would do healing circles. I called them intensives. Because you didn't mess around when you came to my place. It was just focusing on healing. A lot of meditation. We'd meditate 2 or 3 hours.
Oh, wow.
And people would have their eyesight cleared. We had somebody wanted to have a baby, and I saw her little girl go into her body. I saw the spirit go, and she was an OBGYN herself, and that girl was born. She even told her mother what she wanted to be named. It was very interesting.
Wow.
That's how I wrote the book.
And you know, with all those experiences put together, once again, you have a volume of work and have been all over TV, all over media, things like that. What would you say amongst things has been the, before we get into your book right now, what's been the greatest personal revelation that you've had amongst all these things, Elizabeth?
Oh, my goodness. The fact that we can talk telepathically and then it's natural. The fact that you can, when somebody's lying to you, you really do know it. You don't know you know it because you push, we're taught to push those feelings away. Mm. We're taught not to pay attention to our inner impulses. So the most important thing for me is to teach people how to trust that.
Yeah.
It's not wrong. It's never wrong.
Yeah.
It's funny because when you see a person, you know, they say you always know the first minute you see them. That's because of your vibration. That's because of mathematics. That's because when two people come together, they either line up or they don't line up.
Mm. Yeah.
So it's very interesting.
Yeah, and it is very magnetic. In that way, where you may align close, but you won't align precisely.
But you know how you do forgiveness? I think that's a big issue right now.
Yeah.
What you Please. Do is ask, this is what Louise taught us. Always ask yourself, how did I bring this to myself? Mm. When you have an experience that's unpleasant, know that sometimes it can be karma. If it's karma, how did I bring this to myself? And what is the lesson intended?
Mm.
And then when you get to know that, you see your part in it and then you can forgive. Doesn't mean you have to like it. Doesn't mean you have to stay friends. It's something that happens in the heart.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know what's wonderful? I think that one important thing that I love is the new heart center. We have a 10th chakra and we have the 4th chakra. And you learn how to run a circle of light from the 10th down to the 4th through the body, out the back, and up to the 10th again. And you can build that energy and it's called the circle of light. And it's wonderful. It heals. You can send the energy out to others. In fact, one time we had about 15 people and we sent it down to the Gulf of Mexico because of the oil spill. Remember that oil spill?
Absolutely.
In our minds, we were cleaning off the ducks and all the fish and everything. It was powerful.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, it's interesting because that's the power of intention is something that we discuss on this show regularly. Elizabeth, and the idea of not just intention, but consent, especially like you have a whole book about psychic vampirism and whether or not you're a victim of psychic vampirism. And that's one of those, you know, you have to consent for a vampire to do something.
Absolutely.
You have to leave a window open.
They never can do anything without your permission.
Yeah. Yeah, so
it was vibration again, and we got this next decade. This next, we're going into a whole new era. You know, we have a reset coming in February, which is going to be wild. February 20th, and it's never happened on the planet before. We've never had Saturn and Neptune at 0 degrees. So what is 0 degrees? What does Saturn and Neptune rule? They rule healing. They rule drugs. They rule lies and deceits. They bring out the truth. But the best part about it is that they are going to be able to change your thinking. And they're going to heal. The only other time we ever had that maybe is something called in the beginning.
Mm.
That's the first three words of the Bible.
Mm.
And it's a whole new beginning. That's why we have the three-eye atlas. It's here to help us get to in the beginning.
Well, and especially with things like that, and the concept, once again, of frequency in mind, that's something that we discuss all the time is the idea that frequency is not just a sound or a color. It's a thought form. It's how frequently are you thinking something? Yeah.
It's like a wave of energy.
Yeah.
The three Iales went around the other side of the sun. It was seeding that sun with a higher vibration of energy that we have never known here. And I'm going to tell you why, if you want me to.
Well, let's get into your okay. your experience real quick, because I don't want to leave the concept of the book behind yet. So let's start getting into what actually brought about the writing of the new book. Where did it go?
Mysteries Revealed.
Yes.
It's all about what happens at death and after death. And it's about your actions and your intentions while you're still alive. It's very powerful. As a matter of fact, the book vibrates. It vibrates when you touch it. I just thought that was incredible. I was told to write that book. I've been wanting to write it for 3 years because I wanted to explain the other chakras in a language that people would understand. So I did that in this book.
Well,
but it opened up the whole new spectrum of another way of life, another universe, the universal truth.
Well, and how did because you recently, in the last year or so, have suffered a stroke.
In 23.
Yeah. How did that come to bring about some of the revelations that came about in this book?
Well, I've been in this house, of course, it's my grandmother's house, so there's a vibration here. And I couldn't walk. I wasn't strong, so there was tons of meditation. I just worked on myself for 3 years. And the good part about it is that I started to ascend. I started to clear away the clutter and go higher. You work on your life, the experiences in your life, who you've met, what you need to forgive. I had 3 years to do it. So that's what I did every day. I mean, every day. Plus, I kept on my radio show. And my radio show has gone very powerful in the last 18 months because I've done a history of astrology of what's been going on. And I try to talk about it so that the person that's never studied can understand.
Well, especially when it comes to, were you, now, let's get into your stroke experience for a little while, if you don't mind. I know these things can be very personal.
But did
you visit the other side at any point during that time? Or
the other side constantly. That's been continual. I'll tell you what happened. I had the stroke while I was out to lunch with my girlfriend on Deerfield Beach looking forward to lobster. But my face fell. And I guess I became incoherent. So Betty had to call and they got an ambulance and I was in ICU and all my body was out of whack. I think it had to do, now that I looked at it, I think it had to do with getting realigned with a higher energy. I really do believe that. And so I had three shocks on the way down, three very, very hurtful shocks driving down to Florida from New Hampshire. And so I probably added to it because I had a low energy. It wasn't high, it was low.
Sure.
It came. And then I had to go to therapy and they had to take me to a nursing home. And as I'm on the gurney going through the door, I said, I will not accept this. This is not in my book of life. I'm not going to accept it. You have to get me out of here as soon as possible. And I was out in 3 weeks.
Wow. Wow.
I made a statement. I set a condition.
Mm.
And setting conditions have always worked for me. And you don't know how or why. That's what Deepak Chopra teaches. I worked with him too. You see the outcome and you don't worry about how you're going to get there. Spirit gets you there. Your energy gets you there.
Yeah. Yeah.
No matter what it is. You know, Jim Carrey, when he made the mask, he said he was going to have $200,000 within a year, and that's what he got.
Yep.
Because they gave him the movie.
Well, and the idea of especially, A, speaking something as it is, as though it is. Not like, hey, I want this. Like, no, this is.
And I had done that before.
Yeah.
When I was 18. Now, this is before I had did any studying with anybody. My kidneys went bad. And I was in the hospital for 2 weeks. And one day the nurse came in and she was crying. And I asked her why she was crying. And she said, because your sister... your twin sister won't give you her kidney. And I said, well, I should hope not. I'm not taking anything of hers in my body. So we didn't get along. Well, but anyway, after she left, I went up to my spirits. And I said, listen, you guys have a choice. I'm either dead in the morning or I'm going home. One or the other. You either bring my kidney back and I'm going home, or take me. Guess what? In the morning, my temperature was down to normal. Everything was okay, and I went home.
Incredible. Now,
the next day, it wasn't 2 days later. It was the next day, because I said it would be the next day.
Wow. Now,
that's the power of the body.
And also the power of conviction. In that way, there's no alternative. You aren't wishing it. You aren't hoping that it happens.
No, you mandate.
Yeah, you mandate that it will happen.
And that's powerful. And people don't understand it. They don't understand what they can do themselves because we're taught fear. Yep. We're taught fear, darkness, and disagreements or hate or whatever you want to say. That's fashionable.
Yeah. Yeah.
All that's going to get melted away. You watch. We are in the middle of a deep cleansing and the energies are in Aquarius now. We're not in Pisces. We've left that energy. Now Pluto is in Aquarius and that's about unity, community, and caring for each other.
Well, and specifically when you're talking about chakras, frequency, the way that we commune together, one of the things that we discuss all the time is quantum energy and the idea of quantum entanglement. The fact that you and I, despite distance, Elizabeth, by all ninth grade physical science, are sharing an electron shell. Our particles are literally commingling right now, even though we're this far apart because we're 90% empty space. You know,
absolutely.
So the fact that we're a conscious vibration means that, we can resonate with these chakric frequencies that are within us that we corporeally have connection to. But your experience and revelations, especially in this new book, talk about new chakras. Let's get into that for a minute.
The new physical chakras. If you pull up that book cover, you can see them. The new spiritual chakras. You did have it on the screen. There it is. Those are them. Okay, the feet, the foot chakra, then you go up the back, go up to the top. And then you have the eighth chakra, and then you see this line here. To the eight and a half chakra. The eight and a half chakra is actually Arcturian angels that are guarding you not to get too much energy. Then you go into the ninth chakra, which is between the neck and the spine, the brain and the spine. The ninth chakra is where the brain and the spine come together.
Mm.
And then when the night chakra opens, it causes a line through the brain and out the third eye. And it pierces the pituitary gland and the pineal gland. And it's going to give you a new point of power. Our power has always been in the palms of our hands. Now it's going to be in the third eye. And you'll be able to heal with the third eye. And then the rest of them will go up to the top. But if you can, in this any lifetime, if you can get the ninth chakra open, you're doing pretty good. Most people barely touch the eighth.
No, especially...
I have a wonderful meditation on YouTube. I have two of them. One is called The Chakras in Your Body, and I did it with Richard Shulman. Do you know Richard Shulman?
Yes, I know the name.
Well, he's a music, and he put music to my work. The best work I've ever done are two. One is this book. Yeah, there it is. And the other one is that work that I did with Richard Shulman.
Incredible. Incredible. And, you know...
This is incredible. That video is incredible. I only made it. I made this while I was healing from my stroke. I made the video. I had it on an audio tape. But I made this video. And it is very, very powerful. Well, see, it says 2 years ago, so I made it in 24.
Now, one of the other concepts that you talk about is the veil of forgetting. Let's dig into that for a minute. What do you mean by the veil of forgetting, Elizabeth?
Veil of forgetting is, okay, you choose your birth, you choose your parents, you sit with the council of nine, and when you're born... Then comes down the veil of forgetting, and that takes your past lives away. But you have your vibrational keys in your body, and that's your astrological chart, making it desirable for you to have certain lessons at certain times in life. And that's all from the universe and the astrological chart. And what's happening in the sky affects you and takes you to your next lesson, and then your next lesson, and then your next lesson. It's beautiful. It really is beautiful.
Now, how much do our, I guess, that because I've always been fascinated by astrology to begin with. Mm-hmm. How much do our decisions affect the astrology of our
chart? They affect the outcome. The astrology is your passport. It's your fingerprint in life. It gives you the energy to have an experience. Now, depending on your vibration and depending on the experience, how you think is what you get. Let me see if I can give you an example. Let's do a car accident. We have a car accident and one dies and the other one is barely hurt. Why? Everybody wants to know that.
Yeah.
It's vibration.
In what
and
way?
Sometimes we wonder why the drunk has to be alive and the guy driving the car has to pass away. In what way? The decisions you make. When my twin sister, she's passed away, called me up in 2012 and told me that she had fourth stage pancreatic cancer, what was my first question?
Probably, why?
Yeah, no, I knew why. I said to her, how long have you been praying to die? And she said, how did you know? I said, you can't have pancreatic cancer unless you have been praying to die. Now, it can be in your subconscious. It can be because of unfortunate experiences.
Sure.
But, you know, we used to say, oh, I wish I was dead, that type of thing.
Yeah.
You have to be very careful with those things.
And,
but she had been praying to die, and she told me she had been.
And you know, that brings up an important point that I was literally discussing with somebody earlier today, that we discuss regularly on this show, which is the connection to things, especially like Kabbalah. One of the main Kabbalistic teachings is the idea that because the universe was spoken into being and that we were breathed into by the same being that spoke those words, that we have the same creative power with our words. So we have to be careful because it's a vibration that you are ringing into the world, and you cannot take that energy back. The energy might change form, but it can't disappear. That's actual physics.
Let me tell you something. The more we've come along from the beginning of the 1900s to where we are now, those thoughts have gone even more prominent. They were kind of dull when we didn't have the vibration. It's like being stuck in the mud and then going and taking a bath. Now our thoughts are very important. Much more forceful is the word I want to say. Forceful. They're forceful now, much more than they ever have been in the past. And that's why we're teaching now you can set up a new life in 2026. And that new life will unflower to you by 2032. That's beautiful to know.
Yeah.
And that has to do with frequency and vibration. How do you raise your vibration? One way to raise it is to play classical music, and another way is to play Richard Schulman. He's devoted his whole life to playing the higher frequency music. I have part of that in my book, too, about sound and vibration.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, once again, as a binaural beat musician, those things are massively important to our brain, to our physiology, to the way that we operate.
Well, I was told when I had, during the time of the stroke, maybe just before, not to go to any drumming sessions. And I didn't know why. They told me it would lower my vibration. They wanted me to have the bells and the higher music. No drumming. So I haven't done that since then. And I can feel a difference when I listen to the music. I do know Ardus by the Crimson series.
I don't know offhand, no.
Okay, it's Yogi Bhajan. Ardus is the oldest mantra known. It was here before Abraham. And the words they're saying in Sanskrit is prayer beyond prayer. God, I am. God, I am. Prayer beyond prayer. When you play Ardus, you can do anything. I teach people who are having kids that are working on their college exams. If they play Ardus very, very low in the background, they'll bring their score up 2 points. So Ardus is a perfect example of toning and raising your vibration.
Well, and, you know, once again, especially, listening to it exposes you to it, and it makes you think about it. And the more you think about it, the more you hear it, whether you're listening to it or not.
The hearing.
Yeah.
The music penetrates and blows away the blocks. And then you can hear it. And then you can think about it. First of all, the music clears you. That has to happen first.
Well, and once again, there has to be intent and consent there as well. You know, you have
you
to actively.
Be paying it, of yeah. course.
Yeah.
But sometimes you don't know how to do intent if you haven't studied.
Yeah.
And so if you play the music, it will lead you to that. Or it might lead you to an important teacher.
True.
You never know.
True. No.
That's how I solved the Exxon murder.
Which is that?
1993. The president of Exxon was kidnapped out of his own driveway.
Oh, yeah.
And I was in my living room. My father worked for Exxon for 49 years. So there's the connection. I was told, put on the television. So I did. And it was talking about in Morristown, which is about 30 miles from where I live, what happened. I saw it all. I saw everything that happened. And I didn't know what to do. Man. I wanted to get to the FBI. Luckily, one of my students had three brothers in the FBI. So I called her up. And she called them, and they connected me with somebody in Morristown. And I walked through that entire thing. I saw
man,
a blue Cadillac backing out of a driveway. I saw somebody running on the sidewalk, and they fell. He gets out of the car. He leaves the motor running, and he leaves the door open. I knew that. They didn't know how I knew that, but I saw it. He went back to help the girl because he thought he hit her. And a man came out of the bushes. They got a gun, and they put him in a white van, and they took him away. I told all that to the FBI.
Incredible.
And then a week later, I woke up crying, and I called up Tom, I'll just say his first name was Tom, and I told him that the man had died today because he didn't have his heart medicine, and they didn't know how I knew that he had heart medicine. And they said, where is he? We're all so frustrated. And he said, well, we're looking at Newark Airport. I said, no, listen to me now. I said, no, he's in the Pines. He's in a shallow grave in the Pines, and he's off the Garden State Parkway. Do you know where they found him? They found him in a shallow grave in Pinehurst, New Jersey, right off the Garden State Parkway.
Wow.
Now, why didn't that man know? If I said he's in the Pines, why didn't he think of Pinehurst? But he wasn't from New Jersey. He was from Washington, D.C., but that's true. That happened.
And you know, things like that, especially, you know, that we'll be talking with a remote viewer in the next segment. We regularly talk about that concept of non-localized consciousness, the idea that if you learn to listen to your subconscious, that you get all kinds of cues and clues. Like you were saying, that first impression that you get about people that are like, wow, he's lying, you know, things that we so societally are taught to push aside, you know, and not really consider quite a bit of the time.
There's one thing that you missed. My father worked for Exxon. It was the president of Exxon. So yeah, there already was a connection there. There already was a timeline there.
Yeah.
That's why I was told to turn on the TV. It could have been anybody. But it was the daughter of a man that had worked for Exxon for 49 years. That blew me away.
Yeah.
When you sit and think about it.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Yeah, exactly. And, you know, once again, those things having connection like that is an interesting thing to look at. And even
always say, why me?
you mentioned just a little while ago in passing that you had a twin sister. And pre-show, in our pre-show conversation, you actually mentioned that you are one of two of a pair.
Two sets of identical twin girls.
Which is like exceedingly rare to begin with for the same family to have two sets of identical twins. But
two sets of twins is more normal than identical twins.
Yeah. 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 And specifically, twins have a very special bond, especially identical twins.
They can. It depends. Let me tell you what it is.
Please.
It's astrology. My older sisters were like that. They were so close together. They were 2 minutes apart. But my sister and I were 20 minutes apart. We had different rising signs, and we were Pisces. So we were in the womb like this, don't hurt me, don't hurt me, don't hurt me.
Mm.
But my other sisters had their hearts crossed in the womb. I just think that's so important.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, but do your sisters share in any of these gifts that you have that your grandmother had?
I was the only psychic one with that kind of power in the family besides my grandmother.
Okay, okay.
But they all had good intuitive senses. My mother did, too.
Fascinating.
But the psychic the way we were. Because it becomes your life. You don't know anything else.
Yeah.
I can't imagine being without my intuition. I can't even think about what that would be like.
Yeah. Yeah. And especially when, A, you've had your intuition and your gift as long as you've had it and honed it to the point that you have. It is a skill that you possess.
The point of where I have is like practicing a violin or a piano.
Yeah.
You have to work with it.
Yep.
And that I've done.
Well, and with that in mind, here in the last 15 minutes or so that we have you, Elizabeth, let's start talking about those, A, specifically in families that may be disbelievers of other family members, because that can be tough if you're somebody who is a sensitive or intuitive.
Absolutely.
And you have family that you've tried to tell, you know, things like that. But like my son, I would say will probably be pretty fortunate. Like he's gone to the Psy games and learned about mind sight, you know, things like that. So these are conversations that me and my 8-year-old have regularly, you know, the idea that like you're tuned into something else if you pay attention, boy. But not every family has that discussion. Not every family especially has that discussion with children. So it becomes the fact that because we all have it, much like, you know, Lynn Buchanan says about remote viewing, we're all psychic to some extent. The only difference is, A, do you work on it? B, there's some people who, hey, you throw them a basketball, they're just good with a basketball. Like they don't have to practice. They're naturally good, you know?
Yeah, it's an enhancement. And I think you really do not need to run from it when you... For example, when I was young, I was 7 years old, I was walking home from school with a girlfriend, and she asked me how the lady upstairs was doing. And she was an older woman, and she was boarding at our house, and I told her she was dead. I said she died. And so she went home and told her mother, and her mother called my parents up at dinner time and told them she was sorry that Mrs. Vale had died, except she hadn't died yet. She died 3 days later.
Wow.
But I thought she had at that age. I couldn't recognize. I was young, you know. I didn't recognize that it hadn't happened yet.
Interesting. And now, how does, I guess, I don't know if you want to call it a reading, how does this process work for you? How do you know that a message is coming through for you, Elizabeth, that there is something that you need to tune into?
There isn't any knowing. You connect with the energy of the other person.
Okay.
And then it's a stream. It's a flow. Just like you're doing the streaming of this.
Yeah.
And anything that they ask is the trigger. You have to have a trigger. Really, you do have to have questions. Because that helps bring out the information.
Mm.
But sometimes I have to say things to people because it's so powerful. Like if somebody's getting sick, I was in a girlfriend's wedding in Chicago. We were walking down the street and I turned around to her maid of honor and I said, your husband needs to get to a doctor now. He's got a bad heart. So she called him up and he went and he had a bad heart.
Wow.
And if he hadn't gone, he wouldn't have been walking the next day. I mean, it's amazing. So when it comes in like that, I was taught never, ever to share any vision or anything unless you get to the point where you're being told by spirit that you have to.
Mm.
So if I'm walking down the street and I see that a man is smoking too much or maybe isn't feeling well, I won't say anything. It's not my place.
Sure.
But when I was with her, it was an emergency. And her, of course, the bride knew me and knew who I was. So they listened to me, and it saved his life.
Incredible. And, you know, especially the idea of, because this is a question that I have for psychics, mediums, even for good remote viewers, because I practice a little bit of remote viewing. I wouldn't say that I'm psychic. I would say maybe empathic to a degree, but even then, that was something that I eventually chose in a very bad personal way, Elizabeth, to disconnect myself from, you know, to the point that
when's your birthday?
August 28th, 1975. Just
Virgo,
turned
50. Virgo is a healer, you know.
Oh, absolutely. And it took me a long time, A, to not take people's not want of my healing personally. I always took that as injurious when I would try to help people and they just didn't want the help, you know. And then I had to realize, no, they should actively want the help before you try to help them.
And I think that's what I said about it. You can't say to people what's going on. The only thing you can do in that case is I know that I can help you. Would you like the help?
Yep.
And let them choose. It's like setting a condition.
Yeah, precisely. And you know, I always joke that I hear my spiritual director, Father Andy, an old Cistercian monk, you know, when I would go see him and tell him about my problem, he'd be like, how's that working out for you? You know, didn't we talk about that same problem last month? Sounds like you're repeating that frequency, Chris. You may want to think about that, you know.
Yeah, he knows he used the word frequency.
Oh, yeah, no.
So many people in the world don't even know about it.
Well, yeah, because it once again, it's frequency of thought, not just frequency of sound or color or light.
And
you
they
know.
Don't understand what that is.
Yeah, yeah.
Wouldn't it be great to be able to tell everybody?
Yeah, we're trying to.
Well, I wrote the book, and I'm telling you,
and
my friends are reading it, and they cry by the third chapter, and they say, I'm so glad that somebody is writing about this, because it's important for it to get out.
Well, especially when it comes to connection with higher plane, connection with higher self, and moving yourself to that higher frequency, Elizabeth.
Yeah.
It's one of those... We really do have to take into consideration how we connect in that kind of way, how we connect to each other.
Well, that's why I used a wonderful example with Yogananda and Edgar Casey and Louise Hay in the book. So the people that have been recognized, if you read something that they are showing you, you'll listen more. Maybe it'll be a trigger to help open you up.
Indeed. And that's just it. I think we all need the push in the small of our back sometimes, you know,
we all have to stop hating and judging.
Oh, God. Yes. To go.
Know, Oscar and Hammerstein wrote a beautiful song for South Pacific, and it's called You've Got to Be Taught.
Mm.
And she sang it to the children. You've got to be taught to hate and fear. You've got to be taught year after year. It's got to be drummed in your dear little ear.
Yeah.
You've got to be carefully taught. And that's how we were brought up.
Absolutely. And I bring that up all the time. I'm a former youth minister. I worked with ages 4 to 40, Elizabeth. And
that's great.
I will forever attest to the fact that you have to be taught how to hate. It is not a natural tendency of humanity at all. It's something that is trained into us by society and something that is brought onto us and put onto us.
You know, I'm saying that, and I got to get back to this because it's amazing. That three-eye atlas. Mm. What is science doing? Oh, it's coming to the Earth. What is it going to do to the Earth? Well, it's just been everywhere in the universe.
Yeah.
Why would it do anything to us when it didn't do anything to anybody else?
Well, and that's something that we've brought up numerous times, is the fact that there is a cloud of fear that has taken over numerous. And these things take over in a heartbeat. In a heartbeat.
I know.
And it drives conversations. It drives wedges in communities.
And we feed on it.
Yeah. No. We crave it. We crave it, Elizabeth, like to a dangerous point.
Whether they'd like to read Wuthering Heights or a James Bond book, they'd rather read James Bond.
Yeah. I think everybody probably needs to read a little Crime and Punishment myself. But in all sincerity, it's the idea of what do you resonate with and what are you allowing yourself to resonate with? Because once again, that's a point of consent. You have to decide to be afraid and to continue to be afraid of things.
That's true.
So
I wanted to bring up what you said before. It's what made me really respect you. You were talking about the remote viewers that are fake.
Mm.
And there are so many of them.
Absolutely. Same.
Some of them that are really getting out there and becoming famous and all that stuff.
And that's just it. No different than in the psychic communities. No different than in the mediumship communities. The people
back to the early 50s, we had Oral Roberts, we had Tammy Baker, and we had Billy Graham.
Yeah.
The real one was Billy Graham.
Yeah.
But the other two were shysters.
Well, and you know, it's funny because as a former Catholic seminarian and somebody, once again, former youth minister, things like that, it's interesting to see so many churches now using literally the doctrine.
What's happening now?
Yeah, well, and also the doctrine of manifestation. The doctrine of you can manifest these riches in your life. You can make these things happen.
Yeah, that's a come on.
And it's like, wow, interesting to see you taking that path when you said so long ago that was a horrible path of, you know, New Age and things like that. But it's also like what Harry Houdini spent the latter part of his life doing after his mother's death. Was debunking spiritualists and people that were doing fake seances and stuff like that to garner money from the mourners.
Yeah.
Because there was a huge spiritualism movement at the time. And we're cyclically right on the cusp of that again. We're just coming up on that 100-year point of that, Elizabeth. So the idea of that clock coming back around to spiritualism in this kind of way,
it's kind of
a dangerous dance going on between them. I'd love to have you back on to talk about that because I would love to.
I really would.
A lot of my show is about demystifying.
There's signals that happen and that's how you know they're fake, and then you can just turn it off. You need to learn that. That'll help you.
Yeah. Yeah,
you can always sell a fake.
Well, and that's just it. When I taught junior high and high school CCE, the one concept I always taught was the kite string. I was like, if you focus when you walk into any room, what have you, you'll feel like if there's something going on, good or bad, you'll learn to discern the good or bad. The main thing is learn to realize that there's a kite string at the back of your belly button and you'll feel a tug. You'll feel something. Yeah. Or the back of your head. You'll feel the hair on your arm stand up. Something. Pay attention to that. That is your body keying into a frequency that your mind is not paying attention to.
That's hard to do on YouTube sometimes.
It's very hard to do on YouTube.
It makes me sad.
Well, and me too.
I used to do a lot of psychic fairs, and there were these young, very egotistical girls that would put up a sign, I can tap into your Akashic records.
Yeah.
And I laughed because they can't. They can't.
Yeah.
Not until these chakras open. And I went up to her and I said, do you know what the Akashic records are? Can you tell me? And her face went blank.
Mm.
It was a buzzword.
Yeah.
She didn't know what she was talking about. She was in her ego, and that's easing God out. She was in her ego. And she got mad at me, and she went and reported me. But I just laughed because it was so fake, it was nauseating to me.
Yeah.
What makes me sad is that the person who has to hear it and then thinks this is all going to happen, and it doesn't.
Yeah, yeah. You know,
and they can literally get sick after a reading. It's like I never have dinner with anybody that I don't harmonize with.
Mm.
And you never can have a reading. You have to be very careful with who you let read your energy.
Please, let's spend the last 5 minutes on that, Elizabeth, because that is a caveat that I try to get across to people so much, is the idea of how do you learn to recognize that energy? How do you learn to recognize that person that is taking advantage of you when it comes to getting a reading from somebody?
You know, the gypsies on the boardwalk can see these people coming a mile away.
Oh, yeah.
They're walking and shuffling their feet, and they're going ahead, and, oh, come on, I'll tell you, you know, that type of thing. But how can you know that you're sitting with a fake? Look at your body. Are you feeling sick? Do you want to push them away? Do you want to get up and run? Is there fear in your heart? There's all kinds of ways to tell. Because when you're reading with somebody that's loving and that's working with spirit, those feelings aren't present.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, for me, it's also the way in which, if they're asking you questions, you need to consider that they're milking you for information at that point.
Well, it depends, because I ask questions only to the reason I, not the same questions, but I ask questions to trigger more information where other people may ask questions to find out.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And, you know,
I remember being on Coast to Coast with George. You know George?
Oh, sure. Yeah.
And we were doing call-ins. And a guy called from California about his oldest son. And I was reading him about, and I was, of course, right. But I said, but what about your younger son? He has a, and I forget exactly what I said, but it blew George away. He said, how did you know he had a younger son? I said, well, he was standing right there with him.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah. And that's just it. For me, and I've had a few readings done in my life. I've paid for a couple readings from people at shows and things like that. But there was one, and from Maine, actually, Rocky Paul Morneau, amazing guy, was in like Reader's Digest after being struck by lightning a couple times. But I remember a good friend of mine called me up one day, and this was a guy that is not prone to the woo conversation in that kind of way, Elizabeth. All right. He is not prone to it. He's a former Marine. And he called me up and he was like, hey, man, I know this is strange, but I have somebody here who needs to talk to you. And you're going to want to say things. Just be quiet until he's done talking.
And
Rocky just went on for about 20, 25 minutes telling me some of the most personal things from my life that, like, my wife doesn't know some of these things, Elizabeth. My brother doesn't know some of the, my brother knows just about everything about me. But it was like, wow. And that's what you want to look for, because like you said,
but then you want to look for why it's being said to you.
Sure. And that's just it.
Is it being said to you to clear karma? Is it being said to lift your heart from the painful memory? It could be a healing. It could be a removal of karma. That's so blessed.
Absolutely. And from that point on, like, Rocky would call me sometimes and he would just talk for an hour. I'd go, hey, Rocky, how's it going? Go ahead, brother. And I would just sit back and put it on speaker and listen.
I need that vacuum cleaner.
but literally, Elizabeth, that's what I tell people to look for. I say that a good psychic, a good medium has a message for you. Like, there's a reason that they're coming to you. You know, like you said.
And you choose one. Like, if there's 30 in a room and you choose one, actually, you should really take your time. Mm. And then choose one that you resonate with in the body. That usually works.
Yeah, exactly. And once again, trusting that gut, trusting that feeling that you have. Yeah.
You feel it. In fact, they would get mad that I would tell people that as they're walking around, because so many people would not get a reading that day, the whole reading.
Sure.
Because people wouldn't sit with them.
Well, but the thing is, notice they didn't sit with you that day either, you know? So they didn't feel that vibration with anybody. And that's okay. That's all right.
That's not what I said. What I said was the people walking around that would tune into their hearts would avoid the face.
Yeah.
The face wouldn't have a reading during the day.
Yeah. And that's just it. The idea of being able to discern that through that connection, the idea of being able to read that, because it may be the fact that, you know, even though they're there and exploring and open of heart and open of mind, that may not be the day that they're supposed to have a reading. And that's a message that they have to be open to as well.
Maybe they would be too afraid.
Could be.
Could be a trigger.
Yeah. So, and that's just it. Being able to understand where people are at spiritually, being able to understand and being empathetic.
People like to have power. I have power. I can do this, you know. It's ridiculous. Again, that's the ego.
Yeah.
But they do more harm than good.
I think most of us do more harm than good for ourselves than we would ever like to think, Elizabeth, because, yeah, we don't, especially here in the West, we do not take care of ourselves. We are not prone to do so. We are not prone to, A, admit that we're wrong.
It's true. Because when I came through my sickness, I had a hard time wanting to take care of myself. You just don't care. Yeah. I don't care. Who cares? Nobody cares. Yeah. And that's ridiculous.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's just it. And once again, that is even you with your amazing gifts, Elizabeth. It can be there, and that negative cycle can kick in. And if you aren't careful, that negative cycle can take over so rapidly.
That's one of the rules of caring for yourself.
Absolutely.
It's a very important rule. There's rules to live by that are metaphysical, and there are higher rules, but they're good to know. And one of them is don't talk nasty to yourself. Louise would have us go upstairs and have a tape recorder, and we would say every thought as we went up the stairs, and they were always negative. Then we had to go back downstairs, play the tape, and change each thought to a positive thought. That was quite a lesson.
That's beautiful. That's beautiful. I love that. You know, I had a boss in Maine who once asked me, like, how you shoot sunshine up my A every day. Why? You can't be that happy all the time. And I'm like, well, I guess I could choose to be angry and mad.
No, you can't, like, be happy.
If
you're tuned in and you're in harmony, there isn't any unhappiness.
Exactly. Yeah. No, exactly.
Go out and find your joy.
That, precisely.
I hid it someplace.
Precisely. Yeah, that's just it. And that's what I told him, was like, I could choose to focus on every nasty, horrible thing that people say in the world around me all day. I work in a bar. Well, there's a lot of it, you know. No. Or I could choose to focus on what I'm here for, which is to run sound on that stage for some music tonight, which is really cool. I could be miserable all day, or I could be happy looking forward to something that I love. You know,
And it's hard for people that are going through a hard time.
It is. It is.
So they need to, and us people that are their friends need to learn how to be a good partner, because you're a partner with everybody.
That's right. That's right.
And you can't say, oh, I'm not responsible for that. That's not my job, man. It is your job.
It is.
If it comes in front of you, it's your job.
Absolutely. We are all responsible, A, for the frequency that we drag into the room with us. And the frequency that we leave the room with.
And who we bring into our life.
Absolutely.
It's always a test.
Indeed. Elizabeth, thank you so much. Before we let you go, there has been a phone number on the screen tonight. If there's anybody out there who needs a reading, let's explain the phone number and how your call-in line works for all of the listeners and viewers out there.
I'm in the middle of changing over my website. I have a 24-hour answering service. And if you call, you leave your name and phone number. Say it twice so we get it. And we'll call you back. And you can ask a question or you can book some time with me.
Fantastic. Absolutely. And for all the listeners out there, that phone number is 201-934-8986. Once again, 201-934-8986. Elizabeth, thank you so much. Let everybody know where they can go to purchase your books, where they can go to follow your stream.
Amazon. And my radio show, my stream, is Sunday nights at 10 o'clock on BBS, Boy Sam, bbsradio.com. I'm on Sunday nights at 10 o'clock. The name of the show is Let's Find Out.
Fantastic. Elizabeth, thank you so much for your time tonight. It's been absolutely incredible. I look forward to having you on again and again. And you know what? Let's carry on Art's tradition. Let's try and do some New Year's. Let's try and get you back on at New Year and do some predictions for 2026.
You can probably do that.
That would be super fun. So thank you so much for your time. I'll be in touch with links, everything else. You have yourself a great evening. All right. Absolutely. While you are online checking out everything, everybody, from Elizabeth Joyce, once again, a tome of books she has written. I've heard Elizabeth for years on Coast to Coast AM. I was so pleased to have her on tonight to talk. And while you're online checking out all of her work there on Amazon, folks, make sure to stop on by Elizabeth Joyce Visions of Reality. That is at Elizabeth Joyce Psychic on YouTube. That is where you can find her. That's where you can find her frequency videos. And of course, stop on by Curious Realm. That's where you can like, follow, subscribe. That's where you can find all the YouTube channels of our guests, as well as their books, interviews, all of our interviews from live events, things like that. When we come back from this quick commercial break, we will be joined by John Adams. He is the founder of Adventures in Remote Viewing. We will be talking about faux remote viewers and their impact on the legitimate remote viewing community. We'll be getting into that and so much more right after this, folks.
The key to good science is good research. At the heart of good research is a good data set. With the field observation and encounter log from Curious Research, you can easily keep track of your investigative information all in one place, making it easier to review cases and readily see comparisons and contrasts between them. Whether out in the woods squatching, in a back room gathering EVPs, or using high-tech gear to track UFO-UAP activity, this easy-to-carry, pocket-sized scientific data log is the perfect companion for any field researcher. You can find your copy of the Curious Research Field Observation and Encounter Log at Amazon.com or visit the official Curious Realm store at CuriousRealm.com/store to reserve your copy for yourself, your family, or a mind that you want to open. That website again is CuriousRealm.com/store.
Well, hello, everybody, and welcome back from that quick commercial break. Thank you so much for hanging on through that. And also, thank you so much to our sponsors, especially TrueHemp Science. I have used TrueHemp Science's products for at least the last 5 years of my life. And searching for proper CBD, searching for things that actively have good effect is one of the things that I've done through dispensaries across the country as I've traveled for work. And the products put out by Christopher Lynch and True Hemp Science right here in Austin, Texas, are some amazing stuff. Stop on by, check them out. They use a spigeric process where every part of the plant is used. Seeds, stems, buds, roots. Every part is used, combusted, and reused to create an amazing product full of CBD profiles and terpenes, all kinds of great stuff for your body. Stop on by, check them out. TrueHempScience.com is the website that you want to go to. Curious7 is the code that you want to use to save 7% off your entire cart of $50 or more. Our guest in this segment is John Adams. He is the founder of AdventuresInRemoteViewing.com. We are having him on. He actually just posted an article. As you guys know, I follow a lot of the remote viewing community. I'm a remote viewer in my spare time. I've been following this discipline for a while now. And his article, The Rise of the Faux Remote Viewer, just published at AdventuresInRemoteViewing.com. Welcome to the show, John Adams. How are you this evening?
Doing great. Thanks for having me on. It's good to see you again.
Absolutely. Thanks so much. We met for the first time, actually, in Charlottesville a couple years ago at the International Remote Viewing Association. And we were both like, wow, you know, you live in Austin. I live in Austin. Actually, you're just right down the road from me, oddly. But
yeah, no, that's fine. We still haven't met.
Yeah.
And, but the last time I saw you, you were catching up on Mai Tais. I think you were in a good place. And
absolutely. Absolutely. And the remote viewing community is really one of my favorite research communities, because as opposed to a lot of them that are very competitive in their way, as far as trying to drop shoes on each other on social media, trying to get a jump on each other, stealing people's research, even. Like, I've seen all kinds of horrible, horrible things in the paranormal cryptid community, UFO UAP community. I have never seen that in the remote viewing community. It is almost like everybody is in it, at least in the research side. And in the general practitioning side for the same reason. And there's like a collective push for the right things to happen within remote viewing. And I think that's amazing.
Yeah, yeah. I think as far as communities go, it's better than most or many. It's not without its faults.
Sure.
Historically, and not a lot of people know that. You know, it's... there has been, you know, competitiveness, the egos, and bumping of shoulders, and, you know, that stuff goes on in different areas, like you're pointing out. So overall, it's been pretty good, and I think there's a general consensus of people that have been in remote viewing of, you know, the important things and keeping in perspective, you know, methodologies and protocols and stuff like that.
Well, how did you first come to be involved with remote viewing, John?
Yeah, I was, it's hard to pinpoint. I mean, I guess the first thing was when I started reading about it in the 90s and learning more and more over time and then doing trainings and stuff like that. Beforehand, I had been kind of into consciousness studies, you could call it, and out of body and meditations and physics and all connected things. So it was just kind of a snowball effect over time, and at this point it's been quite a while, so I feel a little dated, but yeah, I've been curious about these kinds of things for a long time, since I can remember, basically.
Well, and same here. Like, I first found out about it after the declassification back in the 90s when the folks from SRI first started coming on Art Bell and Coast to Coast AM. Like I still somewhere in my mother's garage have the original SRI videotape that you could like just pay shipping and handling for to learn about remote viewing and the remote viewing process. And for me, it's been an ongoing curiosity in my life until Menlo Park. That was really some of the first stuff that I ever sat in on, where I started hearing from remote viewers, where I started meeting people like Angela Thompson Smith, you know, Lynn Buchanan, Julia Mossbridge, and Pam Corona, all kinds of folks that are out there practicing this and teaching it in various disciplines. But one of the things that I noticed, even our good friend on this show, Dr. Angela Thompson Smith, has recently said that she is going to no longer teach the controlled remote viewing in the way that it was once done. That she would be going into ERV much more, things like that, because the controlled remote viewing has been kind of hacked away at, so to speak, and is no longer practiced in the hard discipline that it once was.
That's interesting.
Well,
I'd be interested just to hear her comments on it, but, you know, ERV had kind of been around at the very beginning, too.
Yeah, yeah.
CRV has certainly gone through its different metamorphoses and evolutions, so to speak, where people have kind of branded it as their own. And sometimes for better or worse.
Yeah.
But, you know, it still continues to be a viable thing to
use. And I think that kind of begets part of our conversation tonight, which is that idea of the faux remote viewer. And I think that comes down to a lot of people's misinterpretation of remote viewing, but also a lot of people saying that they are and I think this is where Angela is coming from, honestly, is the idea that a lot of people out there are saying that they are practicing controlled remote viewing or teaching it, and they are not. They're teaching something different, but it's not remote viewing, and it's definitely not controlled remote viewing in that double blind way, in that true hard protocol. Because even whenever she was my monitor on the cruise, I told her that I'd taken my classes from Lynn Buchanan, and it's hard for me not to stray away from the protocol when I remote view. I've found different methodologies that work better for me. But she was very on point on like, no, you need to follow this process. This is what controlled remote viewing is. If this is what you're doing, this is how you need to do it, you know? And she's not wrong. She's absolutely not wrong in that way.
Yeah. You know, the process is there for a reason. And it's great for teaching and learning. And if you, it's like anything else, you know, playing music or whatever the case. If, you know, writing, if you understand the rules, then you can break them, you know, in an intelligent way or useful way. So if you, you can make something your own in a personal way that suits your style, and that's fine. Yeah. So long as you're not kind of muddling through and misunderstanding things and stuff like that. But the real problem comes when you have people, and this is kind of what the article points to, is people that say they're remote viewers and they don't really even understand it at all. And they're kind of latching on to the popularity and the trend of it. And it's kind of an immediate step towards in their view as legitimacy, and they're able to garner clicks or whatever attention.
Yeah.
I think of it as like a template for viralism. You know, you can take this and say, you know, it also the same thing goes for ET experiencers or people that are part of this secret program or not, you know, this program or that, and they're saying that they're special or whatever. It's a low barrier of entry. It's all you have to do is make a claim and there you are. And suddenly, yeah. I won't name any names, but there are people out there that make claims and suddenly they're, you know, as popular as the next person, they're getting 500,000 followers.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it is definitely, as it's put in the advertising circles, clickbait. It is firmly clickbait. It is something that if you are of interest, and we talk about this a lot on our show, is that want of confirmation married with confirmation bias. You know, that unwillingness to actively look into something. And 3i Atlas is a great example because there have been numerous people in the UFO UAP communities that are releasing like every other day update videos and things like that. These mm-hmm. are the latest pictures. It's like, these are not the latest pictures. Like, I hate to tell you, these are AI generated pictures. They are other things from social media, but they are not the latest pictures. Because yeah, that's not what a comet looks like in such things. It's frightening to see how fast people will latch on to it and take that as the source of truth on That's a topic. True.
What they're claiming is not always supported by other viewers, much less maybe what the science or observation is saying. And in addition to that, you know, we don't know anything for sure until verification afterwards. So yeah. We have to be careful about saying certain things, but yeah, there are some people that are coming on and we're in the age of kind of like deep fakes and people just putting out whatever is either catchy or you know, makes waves, and even if it's not real. So then you have like,
yeah,
Fake Michio Kaku's or fake Avi Loeb videos.
Yeah.
And it's really pretty wild, I guess you could say, because, you know, it's this culture is kind of fostering unreality, you could say. And it's kind of rewarding it in a certain sense.
Yes. Yes.
In a twisted way.
And that's just it. You know, it really does obfuscate things in a different way. And eventually, as we've said so many times on this show, these things become divisive wedges within community that actively lead to separation of community. They don't lead to building community or building a communal form of research or anything like that. They actively serve for causing division within communities and for tearing that research down. And I think the frightening part for me for that, especially when it comes to remote viewing, is the fact that it is a data-driven discipline already. Like, it started in the lab. It began in the lab, you know. So the fact that like, there is more good data out there in remote viewing circles than I would venture to say in parapsychology or even UFOlogy when it comes to good hard lab data. So
yeah, I think we're sort of at a unique advantage, whereas in the UFO community, there's certainly like lots of good disclosure and revelations going on and people coming forth. All that's been great in the last 10 plus years. But we're kind of at an advantage where we can deal with new perspectives and new data that comes in and see where that goes. Obviously not latch onto it or you know, I'm always trying to be careful not to have too much bias one way or the other and yeah. Remain neutral. But, yeah, we're able to kind of maybe let in a fresh perspective and then see what is verified later. So, yeah, that's one of the good traits about it.
Yeah. Yeah, precisely. And the fact that things are checked by outside sources, that things are double checked, that in many forms of remote viewing, you have a monitor there to check you, who is also blind to the target and doesn't know what the target is in that kind of way. And I think that that's where a lot of these issues come in, John, is that people, once again, latch onto the term. They may be doing something akin to remote viewing, tapping into Akashic records, whatever you want to call it. But if you know what your target is before you start viewing, that is not remote viewing.
Yeah, and that's part of the problem. You know, when people come in, you know, whether we want to quibble about terms or not, if they're not blind to the target, then we don't really know if 50% or more of what they're talking about is fantasy or not, you know, because they're bringing in the potential for noise and imagination and personal biases. And that's why being blind is important whenever possible. And yeah, like you're saying, that's what makes remote viewing as it started out.
Well, and even, you know, a lot of the communities I am involved in, reference remote viewing and things like there's a person out there that I'm connected to on social media that, was like, I remote viewed this Bigfoot attack from 1965, things like that. And it's like, yes and no. I don't know. I think A, that's a little front loaded in its way. B, you're remote viewing something that you know the story of.
Yeah. You know, yeah. So, you know, maybe if they were, past it blind and then they viewed it, fine. If not, then yeah, unfortunately, it's hard to, take as legitimate. It doesn't mean that you can't, view things because it's the same thing. It's psychic viewing, but, it's just not as trustworthy. And if somebody is really good, then maybe, but you're still sort of doubtful about what you may be introducing and what you may be talking about as far as what's going on with Bigfoot or whatever.
Well, and with that in mind, John, how can at least the average person out there that sees these posts on social media that may be interested in any of these communities, how can they begin to recognize that faux remote viewer out there, that person that is claiming the title of remote viewing, how can they separate the wheat from the chaff in that kind of way?
Yeah, for sure. It's like I point out in the article, you know, there, first of all, if it's just one person, they're making claims, you probably want to, see what their experience is and how they're regarded in the community. Is their work out there? Is their process transparent? Are they working blind like we've been talking about? And yeah, do they really understand it? And a lot of times with the faux remote viewers per se, you know, they're making claims, but there's not a whole lot, to support what they're saying, apart from their own narrative. And oftentimes this is kind of a way to sort of fast track their own brand name.
Yeah. Yeah. No, most definitely. It is a form of self-aggrandizement in that kind of way of, hey, you look at me. Most remote viewers I know are working in the background. They may have a website up for the services that they offer for consultations, what have you. But they are not like posting the results of their latest case on their website, that kind of stuff. Those things can be called upon when necessary to show provenance of data, but they are not there for that kind of aggrandizement.
Right. Yeah. And it's great to see, a really, dead on session and the process that goes on. But, really, a lot of it is, people go on and it's sort of a performance, you know, they're performing. And, I guess you could say it's kind of this, culture of of narcissism and spectacle that's based on images and presentation. And again, clicks and views. So, you know, people are commercializing themselves, but at the sacrifice of truth and to the detriment of people that are actually putting in the work and doing honest inquiry. And so it kind of dilutes the message or the research. And it lends itself to more confusion, I guess you could say, for people that are out there asking questions and looking into this stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. Because once again, it muddies the waters. And when the water's muddy and there isn't a clear definition, and this is where I fall with mediumship or psychic work, anything like that, that there is a realm of community out there that is fully willing to take a client's money, fully willing to disregard them, their safety, the advice that they give people, things like that. And it is a truly seedy underbelly. And it's no different in the remote viewing community. There are just as many hucksters out there that are willing to take on a case, and not be able to provide data in that kind of way.
Yeah, the only difference is now it's just easier to establish yourself or a presence and be an influencer. You know, these things always existed, whether it was in the older days of remote viewing, you know, there were claims or some fakes or frauds or whatever that maybe were charging training that didn't really have the background and things like that.
Yep.
And then of course you go to the snake oil salesman and fake psychics and stuff like that. So it's always kind of been there, but now it's just, an instant gratification thing. It's instant success and very little, investment in how you get there. And I guess people justify it, you know, by saying that, you know, they're successful with their, audience, and this is, they sort of aim it to what they think people want to hear. And then that goes with like the Three Eye Atlas claims and stuff like that. You know, it's all based around clickbait and, generating the greatest number of hits and attention.
Yeah. Yeah. Now you actually have a projects tab on your website, with Three Eye Atlas stuff there.
Mm-hmm.
What have your sessions for Three Eye Atlas shown you?
So the majority of it, I've tasked it out to various experienced remote viewers that are, you know, they've sort of proven themselves. And, overwhelmingly, it has come up as an artificial phenomenon going on. In the very least, like a hybrid type situation, natural and artificial. So being careful not to make claims about it's this or that as some
remote viewer, okay.
Like it's certainly a mothership or.
Yeah.
Were you going to say something?
No. No, absolutely not. Go ahead.
Yeah. So, again, we're waiting and seeing, but we've already had certain things verified, which is nice. It's been an interesting, experience so far to have certain things where, you know, there's, I forget the number of anomalies now, up to 15 or whatever with regards to this object. And it continues to sort of defy classification of normal cometary activity. And, it keeps requiring extra explanation to make it natural, and it can turn out to be natural, you know,
sure.
If it does, then it's going to be a strange phenomenon vis-a-vis remote viewing, because we're getting all this strange stuff, which could be the noise around it.
Could be.
But we'll see.
Could also be just the literally the projection of the everything being flooded on the noise surrounding it from social media and everything else tainting that data as well.
It's very possible.
No different than if you were accidentally reading your monitor or something like that. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. It's, the fact that it's so, there's so much conversion data in it in green, but there's also this great momentum of, attention, excitement, questioning, and, sort of fear around this whole phenomenon. That, yeah, there are different possibilities, and that's one of them. With all of the strange exotic aspects and with all the remote viewing, I'm tending more and more towards artificial of some kind, but I'm still teetering somewhere.
Yeah.
Somewhere.
And I've held on the show just as a backyard astrophotographer, things like that. Most of it seems pretty cometary, even the reverse tails that are happening, stuff like that. One of the last comets this last year had a horn that was coming out of it that I saw numerous people in my astrophotography groups capture that I was very jealous that I didn't get to get. But it's also one of those, it's only the third interstellar object we've had. Much less the first interstellar comet that we've gotten to study. So we've got a good idea of how comets form in our galaxy, or at least in our solar system and just outside in the Oort cloud, where they come from. But we don't know what interstellar cometary science is, because it's only the third interstellar object that we've ever detected. I guess we have the fourth one now that just came in. So, But for me, I come down in the camp of I believe it's a comet. I think it's very strange and acting in some strange ways. But we also don't know much about cometary science in an intergalactic kind of way or an interplanetary kind of way beyond our own solar system. So, you know, that's still emerging science.
It is. And it may be that it may be harder and harder to classify it as a comet, maybe there could be a whole new category.
Yeah.
Which is fine. And, there could be lots to be learned about it. There could be, if it, you know, supposing it turned out to be artificial and it moved on its way like Oumuamua or whatever, then, you know, there could be things to be learned from there.
Sure.
Unfortunately, it would continue on. But if we're wrong about it from a remote viewing perspective, then there can be things to be learned from that. Like, you know, where can it be improved and what happened?
Yeah.
And that's fine too.
And that's one of the things I bring up regularly on the show and whenever I speak at conferences is the idea of your misses are some of the most important data in remote viewing. Like what was it? What was the circumstance of the miss? You know, things like that. That's how you get, it's no different than if you make every basket in basketball, you aren't really learning to be a better shot.
That's true.
You know, for sure. you may be naturally good and that's great, but you aren't actively improving in any kind of way.
It's like, you know, there are a lot of viewers that are good and they have a good track record that have looked at this. And, I have to some extent as well, but, it's, you know, you could still be wrong. And even though you may be, let's say the best team or group doesn't mean you're going to win the Super Bowl, you may fumble. At the end of the game. And, so yeah, you learn from that. And, as a whole, remote viewing could potentially evolve and grow from that if that turns out to be the case. And again, that's perfectly fine. It could garner some frowns or scorn, but ultimately could grow to be even stronger, better if it learns from those.
Yeah. Yeah, precisely. And how do you think the community should respond to these things?
In, I guess I'm curious what you mean, like,
in specific to the faux remote viewers, to the people who are claiming to be using, the discipline of remote viewing in their practices when they are not.
So, like, how should the remote viewing community respond?
Yeah.
I think, number one is, awareness and having a discussion, which we're doing now, of course, and which is why I wrote the article. I think it's what a lot of viewers were probably thinking to some extent. There's probably some frustrations out there. And, yeah, I think bringing that to light, having that discussion and, I mean, apart from greater awareness and making some changes as far as like how the algorithms work, and stuff like that, which is a bigger discussion outside of our sort of purview or whatever. But, those are certainly things that could help as far as, you know, the attention certain topics are getting. And,
sure.
It's like, what can you do about, fake articles about Egyptian gods or, you know, just discovering the latest giant or whatever. I mean, we can only maybe try to improve platforms and, awareness and in the case of remote viewing, maybe making a better space where these discussions can happen and, attention and awareness can occur.
Yeah.
Cause it is a little disjointed, but you know, that's the case with a lot of communities.
Yeah. But once again, I don't see the harsh competition in research, things like that in remote viewing that I do in other communities. So I think the overall, response across the community is kind of a ripple of the same feeling of what we're talking about right now, where it's like, you know, we need to at the very least call it out when it happens.
You know? That's true. Yeah. And, no one's really said anything about a lot of these claims. Maybe just, in a comment section here or there. So, you know, obviously it doesn't have to be a central focus, but I think pointing it out and bringing it to light and having a discussion is a good start.
Yeah.
And then it can kind of generate other ideas and help understand, well, what's going on and why are we seeing all this?
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that is hugely important because once again, these things can lead to hard divisions within communities. And much like the documentaries, the hit piece documentaries in the UFO UAP community that have happened in the last couple of years, can lead to people not wanting to come forward with their experience for fear of that happening to them eventually. But at the same token, you have a different crop of people that are willing to come forward having had no experience. Claiming that they have in order to hit that point of internet fame, you know, and the one that I bring up regularly on this show is Corey Good, who claimed for years that he was part of the 20 and back program, that he would go fight interstellar battles and be age regressed. And that during this time, he met the blue avians and, things like that. Come to find out after shaking hands with thousands of people, them buying his books, his videos, them sharing their experiences with the blue avians with him at shows and paying to meet him and get pictures with him and all kinds of stuff, that the blue avians were his meditation guides that he came up with. And anybody else who said that they'd had experiences with them were delusional. Those are his own words, folks. Feel free to go watch his 8-hour long deposition. All right. But these are the dangers that we have in these communities where people, A, want that sort of fame. They're willing to do anything for it. They're willing to deceive people for it. And when these people who want confirmation of their belief come to them, they act as some kind of guru and are willing to charge them money to help them follow them down the pathway, you know?
Yeah, whether it's books or videos, lectures, engagements. Yeah. There's another phenomenon, like, just in the realm of energy healing, and there's certain modes that have sort of trademarked this way, and they claim that, you know, they're of a higher dimensional, and so that therefore they're better. Yeah. But then they're charging, you know, X amount, and it becomes sort of like a cult.
Yeah, higher dimensional pricing.
Exactly. You got to pay a premium for the good stuff. So, yeah, I don't know too much about. I've heard of him in the past, and it's not too dissimilar from other scenarios and people claiming that, you know, that they were in Stargate, and but then their story doesn't mesh, or they don't really fully understand the history.
My ex, literally, and this is a lady that lives in Maine, literally contacted me. We still are in contact on Facebook Messenger, things like that. Hi, Jen, if you're listening. But she was like, one of my passengers the other day on my ride was telling me that she was in Project Stargate. And she
has a 3-year-old,
and that she has a chip, and that she has a chip in her. And I was like, okay, that's interesting.
The chip. Okay.
Now, don't get me wrong. I'm not saying chipping doesn't exist, folks. All kinds of stuff. All right.
Yeah.
However, it's the Stargate that got me immediately. I was like, okay, all right.
Because it's such a buzzword, you know. Oh, Stargate. You know, that's like immediate legitimacy because it was the government or the CIA and.
Yeah, yeah.
People can they can claim it because it goes back in time and it's not always easy to verify, obscured by history or whatever.
Yeah, yeah. Unless you happen to be connected with a few people that were in Stargate.
Right. Yeah. And then just there aren't any documents, nobody's heard of you.
Yeah. Interesting. Like the five people I know that were in Stargate have never heard of you.
Yeah, exactly.
but you know, these things really do bring about a point of, once again, concern about what do we do? How do we address these things? Do we address them when they come up? And I was very happy to see you addressing them over on Adventures in Remote Viewing. And you've got some other great stuff there as well, including the targeting app, which I love. Let's get into what you're doing over in Adventures in Remote Viewing and what brought you to create this platform, John.
Yeah, so by and large, it is projects that we're working on and throwing out there. And I've always liked the idea of kind of putting it out there for free to maybe further some awareness or you know, bring to light the whole process and the things that it can that can kind of be discovered with it. And I think it's fine for people to make money from it as well, but always kind of shied away from it. Yeah, so that's kind of what inspired it, and just the love of doing it and sort of investigating these things. And the app, you know, was just kind of thrown together and worked out. And because it's just a good tool to work on and creating like a target pool, for instance, which you can throw in there and sort of annotate, and it's a quick, expedient way of doing that. You can use AI to generate targets, but there are some tricky things around dealing with that. And, you know, like the fact that it can change its mind or, you know, the best way to go about that is to have it create a file in advance and then you look at it after, or even better is to create a encrypted file and they give you the password, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
But this is a handy immediate tool to work on your targets.
Well, I love that. I love people that give away tools for free and make things publicly accessible, because that is what helps research grow. That's what helps foster these things. When things become complicated, or even target pools like that, put behind paywalls, that kind of stuff, it makes it tough, you know, to find something.
And there's always been plenty of that. So that's probably why I kind of shied away, you know, from doing too much of that, not to detract from some other people, but,
no.
Yeah, it's refreshing to me. And when other people do that, and, there's not enough, open source information and awareness and projects. And so that's just a small way of putting it out there, I guess. And it's also fun.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, Lynn Buchanan has his out there that you can look at. The one thing that I've loved over the last couple of years is Irva has created not only a great pool of things like that, but also a professional network, that they have started up because that's always one of the big questions is, how do I begin getting casework? How do I begin finding projects to get involved with? And they have kind of created a launch point for that kind of stuff over there now. And it's really great to see that, you know, like I get things from them all the time where it's like, hey, would you like to take part in this task? You know? And it's really cool, because yeah, there is kind of that concept of how do you begin that process of becoming a skilled remote viewer and becoming, kind of a remote viewer that takes on casework in that kind of way.
Yeah, it's great to have that, sort of direction and, resource out there available. People are always asking, you know, well, where can I learn more?
Yeah.
How can I learn remote viewing? And the training can be hit or miss, you know, sometimes I'm not, you know, I have to struggle to say, well, I guess you could try this person, or, you know, I've always thought about doing it, but it takes work to build up the, materials and stuff. But,
yeah,
so it's good to have those resources in place, and people are always wondering, you know, how can they learn more? How can they learn it? 'Cause there's so many people that come to it and they've just heard about it, or, you know, they saw it in a movie or a video or whatever. And a lot of those people come into my Facebook group, remote viewing and intuition, and they'll answer the question of, like, you know, what their familiarity with it is or whatever.
Yeah.
Usually they're there to learn more about it.
Yeah. Yeah, and it can be a little nebulous, you know, and it can be very nebulous as to what type of remote, because once again, there are numerous disciplines of remote viewing out there. And I've always said controlled remote viewing for me is the way that most people should start, because it is the most disciplined. It really does take you through, I think, some rote protocols at the beginning of sessions that are very important for kind of clean slating things and getting yourself to a point of receiving that information in that kind of way.
Yeah, it provides a really good base, you know, of how a good session will go, particularly on paper and that sort of structure, which can be taken, you know, and used other ways. And it's good when you move into ERV, because that one is a little more flexible, loosey-goosey, out in the other sphere or whatever. And
yeah.
It's the sort of procedures and approaches are handy, you know, in understanding it.
Yeah. Yeah, precisely. And you know, it really is one of those, as we've talked about with Carl McClellan so many times, it's a very personal means of working a problem. And it's interesting to see how people draw and pull from different disciplines within remote viewing and the techniques that they use. Most people, even if they are doing controlled remote viewing, are probably using a form of something else as well, while they are in the process of that.
And it's somebody that's an artist, more of an artist, they might do more sketching and using different mediums or media.
Yep.
And, rely more heavily on sketching and feeling into the target. And, you know, people do a lot of spontaneous writing.
That's something interesting to bring up, because my sessions normally do not involve a lot of sketches. My brain doesn't receive the information in that kind of way.
And it may not be as familiar. Like, you don't work with a lot of sketches. And so that pathway is carved easier for words to come up, surface more. And, you know, people will have pages of word data.
Mm-hmm.
And that's very useful too. So, especially when you get into higher data and you've got sentences and stuff like that, that's formulating, you know, like by the end of the target and like in your summary or whatever, conclusions and stuff like that.
Now, I know most of the projects on your website, things like that, are taskings that you have put forth, but how do you normally work a session before we've got you for about another 10 minutes or so? Take us through how you normally run through a session, John. Whenever
for me personally, like if I'm doing a paper remote viewing session, So I've kind of I teeter around. I don't use strict CRV, but I still have a lot of that in place, and some of that is because I feel like the more experienced or advanced you go, especially if you're an intuitive person, then you're going to maybe feel into it how it works for you.
Yeah.
And for me on the stages, I don't feel inclined to label them, and I'll move more fluidly around it and stuff like that. So, but I'll go through a cool down, so to speak, and which is my own routine. And, you know, for instance, I've studied Reiki over the years. And that's a good tool to open up and relax the body and connect and resonate with the target. There's some other little techniques, but a large part of it will be oftentimes quieting the brain. And this is sort of an approach I started doing years back where, you know, you can quiet the thoughts in the brain, but when you focus like the energy and your intention on actually slowing the activity of your brain, then the sort of racing thoughts and the noise, which you try to avoid, diminishes. So that's always a good approach. But yeah, I'll go typically with an ideogram and go from there and work through it. And, we could get further into it, but I think that kind of encapsulates it.
Yeah. And mine's just about a similar process. I follow a lot of the beginning of a typical CRV session where there's the, and that's what I like is the self-check at the beginning of things where you're writing down things that are your precognitive thoughts, things that have, you know, possibly distracted you during the day before you've done your session, that kind of stuff. I like that process. Somebody asked me when I spoke on the remote viewing cruise why I liked remote viewing so much. And I said, as an American male, I'm allowed to write down my feelings and thoughts on paper and nobody can question them.
You got that legitimate space.
Like, everything is allowed on my paper and it's okay.
Yeah. Well, you may want to filter out some things, but.
Well, yeah. Yeah.
When it goes out there and perpetuate.
But when it comes to that self-check and things like that, like, I can write down anything there. I can write down anything. Yeah, and it's okay.
All the skeletons in the closet.
No. That's right. That's right. So, but when it comes, what do you think, especially you mentioned AI and remote viewing, and I love the concept of incorporating AI into remote viewing, especially when it comes to picking targets, that kind of stuff. There's been some interesting work in, and I want to say it's Patty Gallagher, who's done it with IRVA regarding using remote, using AI as a monitor for remote viewing, that kind of stuff, and training AI specifically as a monitor. And it's wicked cool and a great idea. I think people get confused and get afraid that, like, you know, I don't think AI could remote view to begin with. So
yeah, there are people making claims, and,
sure,
and they're saying even they were skeptical about it, but still, I'm like, I think that, not to go too far on the tangent of it though, but
no, go ahead.
I think that, there are ways that our own consciousness can maybe manipulate it to generate answers, or
sure,
maybe it acts as a channeler, so to speak. Can a computer travel through space time and get answers all on itself? Probably not. So is there some other spooky action at a distance going on? Maybe so.
Sure.
But monitoring, I haven't tried it in that way, but if there are ways to do that, I imagine there's some useful approaches there. It's also good for analyzing and getting bits of data,
yep,
in categories and comparing. Now, you have to be careful though, because I regard them as pretty biased, you know, these large language models.
Oh, sure. Sure.
They can be very neutral or not, but I, you know, still, you know, they can take something and run away with it, and they, yeah, could even make things up.
Oh no, 1,000%.
Like, oh, sorry.
I've actually got my own offline AI that I've built with a few video render cards and things like that. That is, more data center cards, but like, it is being trained offline with data sets and taught to think in very specific ways. But it's not connected to the internet for a reason. That way it doesn't pull data from that. And there are a few things that I highly recommend. SciSummary is one of them. That's a really good one that's used mainly for academic work, stuff like that. And it kind of works in the same way, where even though it's on the internet, it only works from specified links that you give it or documents that you upload to it. So that's the only data pool it comes from. So let's say you're like trying to do a scholarly article on liver disease. You know, you could feed it like 25 articles from the Mayo Clinic and a few research papers, and give it, say, like, give me 1,000-word summary with 10 bullet points, and it'll spit it out. So using things like that, that are offline, so to speak, in that kind of way, where it's like, no, we're going to look specifically at the data that you are being fed, and only the data that you're being fed.
Mm-hmm.
I think using things like that, yeah. We get to, because yes, there are going to be correlations that it sees that we don't see.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's going to be threads of connection and things like that, that especially if you have, let's say somebody like Lynn Buchanan, who has decades and decades and decades and decades of casework and stuff like that. It would take years to cull through some of that and find those connections. Whereas if you feed them all, at least topically, into something like that, you could find data rapidly.
Yeah. Very expedient and handy. And another set of eyes. I always say to, ultimately you're still the analyst and you're in the driver's seat, but it's a great tool to use. And, in the end, of course, you're calling it all together and ultimately creating the analysis or the report or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a great tool for that, as long as you keep it sort of in check or within perspective.
Yeah, yeah, precisely. And I'd once again, I do not think that we will ever see AI doing the viewing. I don't think it can reach into the collective subconscious and that kind of, because that's where remote viewing is coming from, is our subconscious mind. So,
yeah.
Lord help us if it's reading our subconscious minds.
Well, that would be something if they were controlling not only the internet, but psychic reality.
That's some totally different communities, my friend. Believe me, I'm attached to them.
Okay. Interesting.
But yeah, I don't think that when it comes to remote viewing that we're going to hit that singularity moment in that kind of way, where AI is going to take over remote viewing. And I think that's what people are afraid of whenever they hear that, as opposed to using AI to generate targets, using AI to analyze data sets, using AI possibly as a monitor if you're a solo. You know, through some extreme training and teaching them. And, you know, there was even the example that she gave on the cruise in a video where she was using it live and she was talking about a red object. And there was, a typical session where it's like, I see red, I see the color black, I see motion, it's going fast. And the AI's like, it sounds like you're talking about a car. And she's like, please do not prompt me with nouns and thoughts.
So you gotta train it just like a person.
Exactly. And that's kind of the same thing with my AI right here. Like if I want it to talk to me like a scientist about the resonance of frequencies in the chamber of the Great Pyramid of Giza, I first have to teach it about the acoustic spectrum and the electromagnetic spectrum and the way that these things work. Like, you got to train it from the ground up, like I do with my 8-year-old kid. You got to
what they are, a really smart 8-year-old kid or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah.
Encyclopedic knowledge, but still an 8-year-old.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. And going to make things up like an 8-year-old. Because, hey, this thing's here. What if this? You know?
Yeah. Yeah. So I think that AI is the tool. Consciousness is the ultimate, you know, source of where it's happening. But I suppose in a way, the tool is consciousness. It's technology is an extension of consciousness. And maybe there are some cases where we could... our consciousness is making that happen, but just by itself, yeah, I couldn't see them remote viewing autonomously.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Well, John, I want to thank you so much for your time, my friend. It's been great. We definitely need to get together for a drink or dinner, something like that sometime soon.
Yeah, sure, you got it.
Before we let you go, let everybody know, A, where they can find the article that you just put out, where they can go to follow you, where they can go to get involved with remote viewing.
Yeah, so www.adventuresinremoteviewing.com is the website, and there's some other links on there, but Facebook group, you can find Remote Viewing and Intuition. And there's some links you can learn about remote viewing, in the group. You can come and ask questions. So that's one way to start about it and finding out more information. And we're also on YouTube, Adventures in Remote Viewing. There are some videos there. It's just all on what the schedule allows as far as putting stuff out there.
Great. Great. Well, thanks so much for the time once again. It's been a pleasure. I'll be sharing links and everything else. Take care of yourself and hold the line real quick while we close things out with the audience for this episode.
You got it. Thanks a lot.
Absolutely. while you are online checking out everything from John Adams and adventuresinremoteviewing.com, everybody, make sure to stop on by Curious Realm. CuriousRealm.com is where you can like, follow, subscribe. That is where you can find our videos page, where you can find all of the embedded channels of our guests as well. Also, you can find your link to Curious Research. If you are a remote viewer, don't forget that Curious Research now has our new remote viewing session journal that just came out before Cygames this last year. So stop on by, check that out. It is a great way to be able to put all of your session data into one location so that it's easy for you to compare, contrast data, all that kind of stuff. Thank you so much for your time tonight, ladies and gentlemen. It is your open hearts, your open minds that make the conversation. And without conversation, humanity does not march forward. So remember, take care of yourselves, take care of each other, and stay curious. We'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
Thank you for tuning into this episode of The Curious Realm. Stay tuned for more guests, forbidden topics, and hidden truths. Follow us on social media by searching Curious Realm. To download the official Curious Realm app and view the Knowledge Vault, or become a sponsor of Curious Realm, visit our website at CuriousRealm.com. Curious Realm is available on your favorite podcast and video services, CuriousRealm.com, as well as KGRA Radio, APR TV, and the official Curious Realm app for Roku devices. Curious Realm is a proud member of the Ground Zero Media family of podcasts. For more shows and members-only content, visit groundzeroplus.com today. Thanks for listening. Stay curious. And remember, the other side is always watching.